As a real estate manager, Principal Asset Management harnesses the power of a 360-degree perspective, delivering local insights and global expertise across public and private equity and debt. Their teams apply local insights and global perspectives to help identify the most compelling investing opportunities. Principal Asset Management, actively invested. Learn more at principalam.com. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Principal Asset Management SM is a trade name of Principal Global Investors LLC.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Odd Lots podcast. I'm Joe Wiesenthal, managing editor at Bloomberg Markets.
And I'm Tracy Alloway, executive editor at Bloomberg Markets.
So, Tracy, it's the middle of August, and it's about time for a fun summer episode, don't you think?
Yes, I think it is. Everyone's on holiday. People are thinking about going to nice places with beaches and pools. Let's give the people what they want.
Exactly right. Obviously, summer is characterized by pools, hanging out by the pool, barbecuing, grilling, stuff like that. And, of course, there's always a market and economic angle to every story. And so today we're going to talk about these things that we take for granted in the summer and talk about some of the underlying fundamentals behind them.
So this is essentially the markets edition of the pool party, or the pool party edition of the Markets Odd Lots podcast, I should say.
We're here with Polly Mossens, who wrote a great story for Bloomberg recently about pool toys. And before we get into it, I think pretty much anyone who goes on Instagram regularly sees lots of pictures of people floating in pools in these gigantic inflatable donuts or inflatable swans or inflatable flamingos.
Right.
You certainly see them if you follow Taylor Swift on Instagram. And of course, there is a huge business behind that and a lot of money. And we're going to talk to Polly about that business. So Polly Mossens of Bloomberg, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I would love to talk about pool toys.
Great. Let's get right into it. So why is this? How did this become such a huge thing? How big is this business?
It is huge. When I was at the New York Toy Fair earlier this year, which was the dead of winter, it was snowing outside. Inside the Javits Center, they had a huge pool toy display. It was the first thing you saw when you walked into Toy Fair. There was a flamingo that was 10 feet high.
Oh, wow.
It was beautiful and cost, I believe, $400, which is quite the investment for an inflatable pool toy that can pop at any moment.
Yeah, but think of all the likes on Instagram if you have a 10-foot inflatable flamingo.
That's exactly right. So about two summers ago, you started seeing them come up on Instagram, but it really became the thing to have when Taylor Swift, when she was still with Calvin Harris, RIP that relationship, she posted a picture of her on a really beautiful, gigantic swan / Pegasus. It was very regal looking. It had golden wings. People were obsessed with it. And that's really where a lot of these things took off. And you had a couple companies that really became like the main go-to companies. The biggest one among them is Big Mouth Inc. They make about $20,000 a day on Amazon just off their inflatable donut. One style, $20,000 a day.
Wait, this is the pink donut. It looks kind of like the ones that Homer Simpson used to eat in the TV series, right? And everyone's probably seen it at one point or another.
That is the exact donut.
$20,000 a day.
$20,000 a day. That's a lot of money.
Dollars.
Yeah, and that's just off the donut. They have some other really popular items. Their giant pineapple has been huge for them this year. They have a flamingo whose design they've actually copyrighted. It's different from other flamingo floaties. So you can imagine how much money they're pulling in off of these floaties during the summer.
Okay, so with large amounts of money often comes controversy and conflict and competition as other people try to get in on the act. And the donut in particular seems to have attracted some degree of conflict. Walk us through that.
Yeah. So Big Mouth Inc., which is the big kahuna of floaties, they have found people infringing on their copyright, specifically on the donut. And they found this on Amazon. They started ordering competitors' donuts that they were trying to sell off as Big Mouth products. And when they arrived, they were flimsier material. And perhaps most offensively, instead of having 12 colors of sprinkles, they only had 4.
Oh my God. That's, that's terrible.
Horrific.
It is.
I'd be embarrassed to Instagram myself with a donut without 12 colors of sprinkles.
And the sprinkles weren't even shaded in, so they didn't look 3D.
Oh my God.
Shock.
Yeah.
So what did they do when they discovered this?
Well, this was part of two lawsuits that they filed, one against an Amazon seller called Floating Panda and another against Amazon seller Solo Fleet. They didn't have their real identities, so they just filed two suits in Connecticut against these Amazon identities. And the lawsuits that Big Mouth brought basically focused on copyright infringement and a version of fraud. They were claiming that these Amazon sellers were selling Big Mouth counterfeit products under the Big Mouth serial code on Amazon. Mm. So they were trying to just slip them in as real products after they actually infringed on their copyrighted designs.
Now, does Amazon have any responsibility here? I mean, it's one thing if the donut looks like another donut, but if a competitor, as Big Mouth claims, is using their serial code, is Amazon a totally neutral party here?
Well, Amazon does have fraud protection in place, but they have to have really stringent fraud protections that kind of are a process. Mm. Because otherwise, you'd have a bunch of people that are just filing complaints against their competitors because they didn't want them selling a legitimate product that was vaguely similar. So they have to have the product ordered, they have to prove that it's counterfeit, and then they can file a valid complaint with Amazon, and Amazon can take away those products. And Big Mouth did do that, but they finally were very fed up after these two competitors had taken their buy box on Amazon. The buy box is when you go to checkout on Amazon, you press buy now, and there's always a default seller. So there can be, you know, 10 different companies that sell the same floaty that's vaguely similar, but whoever has that buy box is the one who's getting all the sales. And if Floating Panda started undercutting Big Mouth by just one penny on the price instead of a $20 floaty, $19.99, they would take over that buy box. And that's what happened, and that's when Big Mouth started losing $20,000 a day on the donut.
So this is where I think it gets really interesting, because we talk a lot about the importance of Amazon right now, the dominance of Amazon in markets and in business. And the idea that people's business is built around what goes into the buy box, and they can win or lose so much money just based on one Amazon algorithm is pretty significant. Is cost the only thing that Amazon looks at when it comes to the buy box?
It's more elaborate than just cost. There's ratings that go in there, and there's kind of a secret Amazon formula that they're never going to disclose in full. But it is also based on what kind of seller you are. You know, if you had all one star, but you're selling 99-cent products, you're probably not going to make it into the buy box. But if you look like a fairly legitimate seller, and you're selling a less expensive product that Amazon believes to be the exact same thing, you might find yourself in the buy box, and then you're getting a ton of sales all at once.
So what's happening now? They filed these complaints, they filed these suits. Has Amazon done anything yet, or are the competitors to Big Mouth still right there?
Well, in this particular suit, they didn't file it against Amazon. So Amazon did definitely help them with taking down pictures that they thought were being used to sell products that weren't actually Big Mouth products. Amazon has replied to the complaints, but legally, they don't have to do anything here. What did happen is that one of these Amazon sellers came back to Big Mouth after receiving the lawsuit and said, "Give me a week to sell through my product, and you'll never hear from me again." And Big Mouth said, you know, that's not a bad deal. Because their whole goal here is to make this problem go away. They don't want to fight every single person who's selling floaties on Amazon. And they understand that competition is out there. And they certainly don't want to bring these lawsuits. I mean, they've had to actually put two people on staff out of a 22-person office just to police Amazon. So for them, they just want this to go away. And that's really the next legal step here.
So what happened with the other company?
They've not replied to the lawsuit, which isn't surprising. They don't believe that these sellers are in the United States, so it's a little harder to track them down. And from there, a judge can make a ruling on the case, but you never know if there's actually going to be any money collected, especially when this is a $4 million collection of lawsuits.
I kind of love that response from the one company, which is basically like, yeah, you're right. We're kind of ripping you off, but let us just be in business one more week so we can clear out our inventory and make back our costs and we'll leave. It's like a very sort of free market Kosian response to dealing with a legal problem. And it is kind of win-win, seems much better than a long protracted legal fight.
Absolutely. And you don't really want to be left with a warehouse full of floaties.
Right.
Can't blame them.
But think of the Instagram potential.
That's true.
In your warehouse full of flamingos and donuts.
Before we go, there's a fascinating story. What's the big floaty this year?
I think the big floaty is the swan. The swan is a really big deal. It's beautiful. I personally enjoy laying on my swan. I have like 5 floaties. I feel somewhat biased writing this story because I'm really into floaties.
Are they all the Big Mouth brand floaties?
They're not. They're a variety of floaties, including I bought one on Amazon that was kind of crappy, but it was like $7. You know, you have to have a weird one in there.
Polly Mussens from Bloomberg, thank you very much. This is fascinating. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to look at an Instagram pool floaty picture ever again the same way.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, Tracy, so that was half the summer. Half the summer is about spending time in pools. And as we said in the beginning, the other half of the summer is about grilling and barbecuing.
Of course. Of course it is. So what's essential to grilling?
Well, meat, right? Obviously meat. And the good news is that at least in the U.S. this year, there is a meat mountain. There is so much meat out there that the price of ribs and beef and pork and everything else has plunged, making it really cheap to do barbecue this summer.
Okay, so summer has essentially gone on sale because we have inflatable pool toy makers trying to undercut each other, and then we have super cheap meat prices.
I love that. Summer on sale. It's like, I think that should be the title of this episode. All right, so with us now to discuss the meat mountain and super cheap meat products is Lydia Mulvaney. She's a reporter here at Bloomberg who covers agriculture. Lydia, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
So, Lydia, why is there a mountain of meat?
Oh, there's so much meat. It's because there's been a kind of a perfect storm where, like, chicken producers and hog producers and cattle producers, they're all expanding their herds at the same time. And there were some record prices for those, for meat, a couple of years ago, even last year for beef. And those high prices just made everyone go crazy and expand their flocks and herds. And so now we have like all three important meats, you know, a lot of it at the same time. And so they're all kind of competing with each other at the store, and the result is just really big discounts compared to previous years. And actually, a lot of them are at like multi-year lows for the prices.
I love it. I mean, you know, it's the cliche in commodities, right, that high prices are the cure for high prices. We saw it, obviously, with the multi-year oil boom, and then there was so much expansion of drilling and exploration, and then the price of oil crashed. So it sounds like essentially the same thing happened here, except with the meat market.
Yeah, but and I don't think that they necessarily all happen at the same time, where it's like chicken, pork, and meat doing this, chicken, pork, and beef doing this at the same time. But at this point, you know, it's all three markets, and so the total meat supplies are going to be a record for sure this year. And then, so there's really cheap grain prices right now, too. So it's even cheaper for producers to produce meat. So there's a lot of people out there saying that this isn't going to stop. It's just going to, you know, it's going to go for a couple of years. There's going to be this expansion, and so should have pretty good barbecue prices next summer, too, and maybe even the next one.
I remember, you know, just a couple years ago, we were talking about global demand for meat really taking off, especially in places like China. And it's kind of surprising to see that supply has been raised so much that it's offsetting what was supposed to be a big increase in demand.
Yeah, so because of the prices in the U.S., meat consumption grew the most in 40 years, or some very large number in 2015. So Americans are pretty close to like peak meat eating. So we can't actually eat all the meat that's going to be produced in this country. So it really needs to go to these other countries. And yes, there is like rising meat consumption, but you know, there's other producers that were that you know, are competing with the U.S. So I think it remains to be seen what happens. I mean, basically, if you know, China and other emerging countries aren't going to absorb, you know, the overflow from the U.S., that's just going to mean it's going to back up here and be even cheaper.
So Joe mentioned a potential parallel with the U.S. shale boom in terms of supply rising really quickly to take advantage of higher prices a couple years ago. Was there any technology involved in the supply growth in meat?
I don't think it's a specific technology, but producers are always working on, you know, breeding more efficiently and getting the genetics right. I think for pigs, like pigs have way more piglets today than they used to.
So Joe's a very keen barbecuer. Can you recommend one specific meat that's the best bargain at the moment that be grilling next weekend?
That's a great question.
Ooh, best bargain. Well, so in terms of things that were expensive last year but cheap this year,
right? Like, what's really I should take?
That would be beef.
Beef is really what's cheaper. What are we talking about?
Well, just for like, it's still expensive compared to like pork, but it's way cheaper than it was last year. So if you're looking for that discount, that would be it. But I guess, you know, chicken and pork are just really, they're really down there. Maybe ribs.
Oh yeah, I've been smoking a lot of ribs this summer. I need to actually take a ribs break.
Actually, you know, like pulled pork is every. Oh, that's not a barbecue item. Never mind.
No. Definitely, I could.
But maybe you can put like pulled pork on your burger. I don't know. I don't know what people do these days.
Before we go, how much of a just? I realize we haven't hit it. How much of a price crash are we talking about specifically from the wholesale perspective? How much have prices gone down?
Okay, so for beef, it's about 15% from last year, and pork is about the same. Chicken's about 20% cheaper on the wholesale, like chicken breasts. So, you know, and that's from last year, and there's, you know, for pork and chicken, like they've been going down for like a couple years. So this is actually after some pretty significant discounts. So those are like multi-year lows. They're like 5-6 year lows for the price.
Well, it seems pretty clear that this is a good summer to have gotten into doing barbecuing, and with any luck, perhaps not for the farmers, the summers ahead will be inexpensive as well.
Yeah.
Well, Lydia Mulvaney of Bloomberg News, thank you very much for joining us telling us the good news about meat prices.
Thanks a lot.
So, Tracy, you know, obviously the theme of that episode was summer, but as you pointed out, another one of the themes was falling prices, and we sort of explored multiple ways in which the Fed is being challenged in trying to hit its inflation target. One is about technology and how new markets make price competition extremely easy and liquid. And the other is just about falling core commodity prices and these gluts that we're seeing all over the world that don't seem to be going away anytime soon.
Well, you're taking this episode very seriously.
No, I didn't expect to. I thought it was just going to be the sum.
I was going to talk about the floats and which one I was going
to
buy.
All right, well, go to you can talk about that.
No. Well, the thing I was very interested in was, well, the inflation aspect of it is a big, big question, especially in light of technology. And actually, here we go. Okay, just to link the two, I wonder a lot about the role of a company like Amazon in inflation, because it seems in some respects like Amazon is really a benevolent monopoly for consumers, right? It's super cheap.
Right.
It's very efficient. We can buy cheap inflatable pool toys. We can even buy groceries and meat nowadays off of Amazon. And that's great for consumers, but it means low prices, obviously low inflation. And I wonder about the, I suppose, challenges for businesses in that environment.
Totally. I mean, if you could theoretically gain a quasi-monopoly by dominating the buy box with a 1 cent decrease in price. Obviously, as Polly pointed out, it's not quite that simple. But if just this minor price cut can create this radical competition dynamic, the likes of which you wouldn't, you know, if you're talking about physical retail, 1 cent price cut isn't enough to make you go to a different store. It's hardly.
It never would have existed
right.
10 or 20 years ago.
So it is really fascinating, the dynamics there. And I'm also fascinated by the extent to which something like Instagram can drive a whole new category of industry, which people would have never imagined.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would go long Instagram props at this moment in time, right?
Yeah, I'll keep watching out on Taylor Swift's Instagram to see what the next big thing that she posted with.
All right. Are you barbecuing this weekend?
I am, and I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'm thinking pulled pork actually. So, on the next episode, I'll talk about how that goes.
Excellent.
All right, well, this has been another edition of the Odd Lots podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Joe Weisenthal. You can follow me on Twitter at The Stalwart.
And I'm Tracy Alloway. I'm on Twitter at Tracy Alloway. Thanks for listening.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.